Hi, and welcome to the River Talk Podcast. This is a podcast about rafting, kayaking, whitewater, rivers. I don't know, whatever we want it to be about. It's really fun for us. And it's hosted by Priscilla Macy, Eric Weiseth, and me, Zach Collier. And Priscilla and Eric are out doing stuff. They might join them partway. But today we have everybody's favorite guest host, Aaron Cavagnolo. Welcome to the show, Aaron.
Thanks, Zach. Glad to be back.
And we have a great guest this week, too. We're just going to introduce him right now. It's my friend Dave Prothero. Aaron and I met Dave last year at an IRF, International Rafting Federation, instructor course, so we could teach classes, and we spent the week with him and just really kind of got to know him well, liked him, and he even hangs out with us once in a while. And Dave has guided all over the world. He's a big-time kayaker, and he has an awesome website, raftinglife.ca, and the CA is the dead giveaway that he's a Canadian. With that, I want to welcome Dave to the show.
Thanks very much, Zach.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. And Dave, you normally are guiding up in Canada. What's happening in the guiding scene in Canada right now?
Some stuff is getting started. There's trips running in Squamish and up in the Fraser area, out in Golden on the Kicking Horse. The area where I go up and guide mostly in the summer this year has slowed down quite a bit. And the Yukon, due to it's quite a remote area, crosses a number of different borders, being the Yukon, BC, and into the States on some of the trips. And we're near some First Nation or Indigenous communities and that sort of stuff. The Yukon is just opening up in July to BC and Northwest Territories and Nunavut travel. But things aren't, or there might be some trips running on later on in August. But right now there's, the multi-day trips up there aren't happening, at this point in time.
Is that a government thing?
Yeah. Okay. It was shut down until July through, the Board of Health for Yukon.
And so that would be like the Tatsunshini, the Alsek, the Nahani, stuff like that.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay.
Yeah, we had quite a few trips running with the company Canadian River Expeditions and Nahani. So there's a whole slew of trips that were up and running. When the news came down and then things changed all the time. And right now they're looking at maybe opening some stuff up to local residents in August at this point in time.
Wow.
And waiting to hear if that happens so we can promote those trips and that sort of stuff and get people out there. That area is really, really amazing. It's quite unique.
So no private, if you have a private permit, you can't use those either?
It's going to be tricky. Right now, the U.S. border is still closed until July 21st. I know some people are going up to Alaska from the U.S., but they have to take a direct line right through B.C. They can't really stop anywhere to sightsee and that sort of stuff on their way north. So right now, the U.S. border in Canada is still closed. So getting into like the Tatsunshini and the lower Alsek, they both take out in the States. So that one doesn't really work at this point in time, stuff like that. And then there's Indigenous communities and that sort of stuff are pretty high stress about a lot of this sort of thing. So it's harder, right, to travel into those sort of zones. And when they're asking, I know the Stikine this year, the First Nation community basically said, like, don't come up here this year for kayaking and that sort of stuff. So, you know, we were putting that message out. That message was being put out a little while ago. Keeping out of those areas, keeping those areas safe. We want to keep those good relationships over the coming years.
Yeah. Well, so Dave, welcome. And we normally start off with news of the week. I noticed Eric just joined in. So welcome back to the show, Eric. Eric's a few minutes late.
Per usual, these days. Late to everything, it seems like. So.
Yeah. do you guys have any news of the week before we get started?
No.
I'll hop in, give Eric a chance to catch his breath. Well, Zach, we were talking before we started the show. It seems like trips are going everywhere here in the lower 48. Like we've got, Idaho's running and Oregon's running and California's running and Arizona's running. Seems like, kind of, I don't want to say business as usual, but kind of, it seems like there's a lot of people getting out on the river right now.
I mean, I put the word running in quotation marks, right? Like, people are running trips. It's just different.
Yeah. But I
mean,
find
there's a lot of stipulations around what you guys are running trips with, like group size, bubbles, wearing face masks, that sort of stuff.
No, I mean there are outfitters who are doing stuff like that, and then there are outfitters who are not, and businesses across the board who are not, right? So there's a huge sort of diversity amongst what's happening out there for sure. Yeah, but it's all over the place.
I mean, the agencies are basically saying you can run trips as long as you follow state and local requirements. So they're not telling us exactly what to do. They're trusting us to do the right thing. And I think most of us are doing the right thing.
Agreed.
You hear stories, that some outfitters are not doing anything COVID-related. I mean, I don't know if they're true or not. And private boaters, same thing. They're just told, like, follow state and local regulations. Some of my good friends are launching on the Rogue this Sunday. I think there's 10 of them or so, and they all got COVID tests before they left. That's part of their group thing, is let's all get tested before we go. So it's why not? So I think that commercially, a lot of the outfitters have agreed to a certain set of protocols on how we run trips amongst ourselves. It's instead of coming from the government, we've agreed on what makes sense. And then the private boaters are given a lot of leeway, and each group is doing things differently based on their own group.
Yeah. I would say on the commercial side, I've been, it's been really encouraging to see that most folks are taking it pretty seriously. Mm-hmm. How that trickles down into like 100% of their staff is, I think there's some real diversity there, but for the most part, people are doing really, like being really responsible and trying to do this right. The communities around them, maybe less so in some cases, but I think that even that is changing. Like there's starting to be some more seriousness around like wearing face masks and distancing and some of that kind of stuff. So, which is good.
But you talk about certain states too. Just Dave, to give you some perspective on, like in Arizona, I think there was like a rule that you couldn't require face masks up until recently. And now the governor switched and said something to Zander like, well, counties can do what they want now. But before it was like, no, you're not allowed to require people to have face masks. So it really is varying state to state, county to county, and so like what outfitters are doing, I mean, I feel like it's the same type of variation. It just depends on the people in charge and how they want to run things. But from my impression, which kind of goes along with what Eric and Zach are saying, is that most outfitters are really trying to create, an environment that feels safe, that people feel comfortable, which, I mean, that's our job. That's what we do as guides, right? We bring people out to a place where they're not comfortable and try to create a comfortable environment for them to experience it. So,
yeah. And I think that a one size fits all regulation would be tough. If it's that everybody wears face masks in the boats, well, that doesn't make sense sometimes. Like maybe it's more responsible to have a guide 6 feet away from four guests than it does to have everybody wear masks in a boat, for example. So I like the fact that we're not being, it's not like top down, here's how you run trips. It's like, do be responsible, and then we can adjust our trips based on what we think makes sense for the style we want to do.
Totally agree.
So, 100%. Eric, I bet you and I do slightly different things just based on the style of trip that we're running. You run a lot more inflatable kayaks, Orange Torpedo, which it's much easier to socially distance during the day. Where most of our guests are, well, a lot of them are in rafts, so we have to do things slightly different to adjust to our style.
Yeah. Yep.
But
so there's our COVID segment.
Yeah.
The have to have COVID segment.
Yeah, it's I feel like it's all we talk about offline sometimes, so we always end up going there. But let's do some non-COVID. Any non-COVID news out there?
I've been so busy I haven't paid attention to literally anything. I have no idea. The Salmon River's holding strong. Like, those that thought flows were going to drop off and it was going to be this, you know, early low water year, that has not been the case. Salmon was holding at almost 30,000 at Whitebird today, which for this time of year is generally pretty high. So, you know, that's something kind of exciting. Things are happening.
Yep. Yep. Well, before we start with the show, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Sotar. They've been very generous to support the show. And today I want to point out one of my favorite products they make, which are the Sotar Legend cat tubes. I have a few myself, and having tried all the different cat tubes, I personally think they're the best design. So good job, Sotar. And again, thanks for supporting the show. I want to start today, if this sounds good with you guys, by just sort of hammering Davey with some of our like common questions and sort of some of our like debates and see if he can sort of solve some of these things for us. And, you know, Dave has guided all over the world around tons of people, is incredibly experienced. And I just want to get your thought on some things. So I'm going to rapid fire question you, Dave, if that's cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, let's just start off like with an easy one. Are you an Orlox guy or a Pins and Clips guy?
I started off guiding on Pins and Clips, but I'm definitely an Orlox person by far. Free rowing. Love it.
Yeah, dude.
Best thing.
I knew
Free rowing.
This is
free
totally
rowing, Zach. Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
He's totally spot on. Absolutely. I like this guy.
Like for Windy Rivers, like rowing up on the LSAC as it's hot, like being able to spin yours in the wind, so good.
I agree with you there 100%. But like, let's say class 4+5, do you have a preference there?
Still.
Same thing?
Still the same now. Same thing now. Yeah.
All right.
I'm so used to it. I love it.
All right. Do you drain your cooler or not drain your cooler?
Drain.
Why?
For sure. Partway, it just keeps the amount of water down. And, yeah, I find it works better. We definitely drain the cooler up on the north.
Can I ask a follow-up question on the coolers? Do you guys even need to bring ice up there for your coolers?
Actually, it's been super warm last few years. But, yeah, we bring some... We freeze all our meat, so it's we bring that along. It keeps everything pretty nice.
You just freeze the meat. You don't bring any extra ice. Just frozen meat keeps your coolers cold.
And then we bring some extra ice as well.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever like gone up to an iceberg and just taken a chunk off and put it in your cooler?
Yep. Oh, totally.
Yeah. That's
and
nice.
We've also used that for like having a nice little cocktail evening.
Yeah, the ice
10,000-year-old ice in cocktails is pretty
sweet. Amazing. The ice restock partway down is a pretty nice gig. All right, next, how about are creature crafts lame?
I haven't ever been in a creature craft. They look pretty interesting. I have a shirt with a creature craft on it with a little dog. That Lady in Golden drew, and then Hammer Factor produced, and I purchased one because I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. They're a very interesting craft. They've done some very interesting things. I've seen some horrendous carnage on YouTube from them. But maybe they have their place in certain areas. But again, I haven't been in one. I don't know if I'd want to go in one, but they've done some amazing stuff in them. That's for sure. I'll say that.
Would you when you guide the LSAC and you helicopter around Turnback Canyon, do you want to run Turnback Canyon?
Not at the levels that we're there at when we're heliportaging around. I'd like to go back and look at it at lower flows and see. I need to spend a good summer kayaking. To get up to it, but it looks pretty amazing. Footage that I've seen of it at lower flows looks good, but the last two trips I've been up there have been around 1200 to 1400 CMS, and I don't want to go into it at that level at all. No interest.
What about in a creature craft?
Nope.
Okay.
Not for all the tea in China.
I mean, for me, that was like, I'd like to run Turnback Canyon. I'm never going to kayak it. So I'm like, well, the one way I could do it is just strap myself in a creature craft and see what happens.
Yep. You could do that.
That sentence is the problem with creature crafts. Like, that is the definition of what's wrong.
Strap yourself in it and see what happens. I mean, I would row a little bit. I would row. I'd, you know. But all right, the next one's a longer topic, and we've been talking about this a lot lately. And it is, for raft guides, what do you think about safety vests, like safety PFDs? Are they must-haves, like, maybe, or not useful?
I find them very useful. I like mine a lot. I use an Astro Green vest, and I find it very comfortable. Works well. Up north, I actually use an NRS, what's that new Zen PFD, because it has clips on the side, and I end up changing out layers fairly regularly when I'm rowing up in the north, between putting rain gear on and taking off a fleece, putting on a long shirt, depending on the weather, which changes throughout the day sometimes. I find it a lot easier. But down in other areas that I've worked, I find a green jacket works really well. You have a tether on it, which can be used for a variety of different things. It's just comfortable, holds enough gear for me. It's got little pouches on the side for putting extra carabiners and small pulleys and that sort of stuff in it, depending on the type of river I'm working on. Just super comfy, easy to wear.
The tether, I mean, as a raft guide, let's just ignore kayaking. As a raft guide, what can you use a tether for?
If you need to do like jump out and rescue somebody, you can use the tether to be like a tethered swimmer. If somebody, or to grab a raft. I've worked on some small volume technical rivers where sometimes a raft gets stuck in a hole and then you need to maybe jump out and do that. So you can, somebody can tie like a figure eight in a bite really quick, clip into that, and then you can jump out and grab onto the raft and get pulled back toward shore.
Do you need the tether to do that? Like, can't somebody clip into the ring in the back without the tether?
Yeah, totally. You could do that as well.
But you still need a rescue vest for that scenario, Zach. So you didn't answer your question.
I mean, there's two questions. There's one, is a tether useful for raft guides at all? I'm going to claim the tether is not. Because all it does is allow you to clip yourself into a rope when you probably should have somebody there to help you clip into it anyway.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like if you're doing that sort of thing. I always have a locking carabiner on it. It's always locked off. And I do a lot of kayaking, so I tend not to have two different PFDs.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
The two activities. So in a lot of places I've worked, you can go kayaking after work. So you go rafting during the day and then you go kayaking in the evening or in the morning before work. So it's hard to be like, oh, I need to, I keep it pretty tight. It doesn't, it doesn't have a lot of, looseness to the system. So it stays pretty clean.
But have you ever seen, so let's just talk about, ignore the tether, just the rescue vest, like the little harness and the ring in the back. Have you ever seen that used for something that it's non-equipment? So let's ignore rafts. Like, have you ever seen it to actually save somebody?
Let's see here. No, but there's definitely potential for it. Like, I mean, it could be used. It's just there, right? So that way there, if you need to be tied, clipped in for some reason, and so somebody has a rope with a carabiner, you can clip into it, and then you could be on a tether to go out and reach for something. I've used it before to go and get like a, on the downstream side of a log or something, to get a paddle, just so that way there, if you fall off here in the river, you can get pendulum back toward the shore. So that's a quick, easy thing to do, and it's still safe because you're able to release yourself from the system. That's the main thing I've used it for. But
Zach, that's probably the best reason we've heard, is that like you're going to a little exposed spot to do something and you can kind of be belayed almost like you're climbing or something. But if you fall in the river, you can get pulled in, but you don't have to hold onto the rope. Yeah, that's a really good one.
But it's it sounds like it's all equipment recovery.
But that's still recovery is critical part of boating, right? Like there's still like there is safety involved in equipment recovery because you're not just going to leave your stuff there. Like sometimes you need to get your stuff back to continue your trip.
Yeah.
So ultimately, like that's part of the safety deal. And I've seen people use that, you know, trying to get boats off at Blossom. You have one person holding onto your, you know, your tether off the back of your harness while you're trying to crawl up there and get ropes around the tubes and stuff like that in case you start to fall off. So I can see
I worked for a company in Honduras called Omega Tours. And we had a rapid called Ziploc, which is sort of like a, I don't know, a little bit of a pour over sort of rapid. And we had a raft one time. We were doing safety on the downstream side and the raft flipped and got sort of, it was being held up in the hole and there is potentially for people to be underneath. So the other guide, Jezza, he's a New Zealander and I clipped into him. Belayed him, he dove into the water, grabbed the raft, and then I pulled on the rope to like pull him and the raft out so that way there we could make sure we cleared it for clients and stuff. And so that worked well for that instance as well.
You remember in the IRF course when we were doing errands and like check off for trip leader and that his boat got surfed in steelhead?
Yep.
Did we put somebody on a tether to get that out? Do you remember? Didn't somebody have to jump on the raft and we pull them out?
Yeah, I think I was on the tether. Yeah, I was on the tether.
I feel like you were, and
And then I just used my clip line. I clipped onto the raft. There was another raft. We lowered the other raft down beside it, walked out on that raft, clipped onto it with a flip line, and then just walked back with the webbing and then pulled it up from there when I was back on shore.
We had you on a tether for that, right?
Yeah. Okay. So that way there, if I fell out of the raft, then I would just get pinned back in downstream or got stuck underneath the raft or something.
Yep. All right. This is helping me. These are good talks for me because I'm on such like a fine line right now between the value of rescue vests for guides or not. And so this topic keeps coming up and this is helpful for me. Eric, I love your point that the gear is important because you need the gear to keep going. Like I'm so stuck on like just saving people and like not worrying about gear so much, but that's a good point. So thanks for adding that part.
Well, and I think the one thing I would add to it too is that, again, like you use the example of Blossom just because it's such an easy example for people. Blossom Bar on the Rogue. Blossom Bar is always kind of an intimidating rapid because you have to make that cut above the rocks and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a lot scarier when there's three people's rafts stuck one on top of the next on that fence. You know, so if you go swimming, you're swimming into all their crap that's stuck on the rocks. So pulling your stuff off of rocks is also a safety factor for others.
Yeah.
So.
And if you had like a safety spot and you worry about swimmers going downstream, I mean, you could only get one or two people potentially, but you could have somebody like a tethered swimmer using it for that instance to like jump out and grab people.
Yeah. I never, like everybody I talked to has never done that in a raft guide scenario. Yeah. Right. Like it's always, it's always like a kayaking scenario. It's never like I've worked as a raft guide and I was a tethered swimmer. So I haven't like you're incredibly experienced. You've seen a lot of stuff, you know, so that to me says something. If you've never seen that actually, we all understand in theory how that works, but in practicality, it doesn't really happen.
There is a company on the Ottawa that does that below, Garvin Chute on the middle channel of the Ottawa.
They swim out. Yeah. But here's a follow up question for you. With a lot of the places you worked, would you want those people clipping someone else they're working with and have them go out and try to do some of the stuff you've talked about doing? Is that going to create more problems than solutions? If that makes sense.
Yeah, and on some of the smaller technical rivers, it works pretty well. On big volume stuff, it's a lot harder to do for sure. But like in that instance in Honduras, like I've only done it a few times with that sort of thing, or retrieving gear on like on some woody creeks or like trying to cut wood out in potential areas on creeks in BC and stuff, then that's instances where it comes into play for sure. And that's for some of the rafting that we've done in different areas of around Golden and stuff, and different areas just prepping rivers for when we take clients down them.
Dave, you kayak a lot too. Like, you're a prolific kayaker. Do you use your rescue PFD a lot for kayaking?
Yeah, for creeking and that sort of stuff, using it for like doing sort of safety stuff if I'm near edge protection. I use a harness. Yeah, off and on, not that much. I used to use it more for clipping on boats, and I don't do that anymore. Now I have a piece of webbing that I bring with me with like a bigger locker beaner that I can use to clip on the kayaks and then throw over my shoulder. I don't use the tether.
Why do you do that?
That was one of the things that we were talking about in the IRF course, just having like a freer system, and it's not using the tether as much.
So like a freer system as in like it's simpler?
Yeah, it's simpler.
And I can't remember, why were we talking about not using the tether as much? Because sometimes it doesn't release?
Yeah, and it sort of stretches out the system. And it's also easier. So like I found a few times, like I was using the throwing a piece of webbing just over one shoulder and then pulling the boat, but then somebody else is on the shore and you can just pass the.
That makes sense.
Free and clear. And then you could go get the swimmer. Like you don't have to worry about trying to unhook the boat and all this other junk. It works really well. I mean, it took a little bit to get used to it, but, when I was doing some teaching for Strathcona Park Lodge for their kayak portion of their outdoor school, I tried that out quite a bit. And yeah.
All right. Well,
just to review the first part, Zach, I think this is an important part for kayakers though, is that that system that releases isn't designed to release on the weight of a kayak you're towing behind you. It's designed to release on the weight of you being dragged in the river with a lot of force on you.
Yeah.
So if you need to get rid of that kayak quickly, you can. I think that was one of the things we talked about, wasn't it, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it may not be releasable because it won't thread through the little metal buckles.
Yeah. So it's not getting pulled hard enough against you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so you're like, you're letting go of your kayak paddle and trying to futz with that. Or, you know, what are you doing if you need to get away from that boat? You're connected to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, let's move on. We've beat rescue vest to death. And this was actually super helpful for me. I have three more just quick questions. And that wasn't a quick one. And then we'll move on to longer questions. What's your favorite raft? Like favorite, is it, what manufacturer do you like to use the most?
Good question. I own an Air, which I've had for a long time, which is super fun. It's 13 foot, like a Puma. I like NRS rafts. They're sturdy. They work well. Sotars are pretty awesome. I've used Moravias a lot up in the north, and the Yukon. And so, yeah, I don't know. Most of them work really well. I use Rikens when I worked on the Kicking Horse. We had little 11.5 foot spray boats from Austria, down in Honduras. I don't know. Yeah, most of them float pretty well.
So you're pretty much happy. Do you think that like rafts are like they're designed by river almost? Like on the OSEC, you might prefer NRS for some reason, where somewhere else you might prefer a Sotar.
Yeah, like when I worked on the Ottawa, we had like 14 foot, and then we ended up with 20 foot Sotars, and they were 14 foot Sotars. Man, so fun, so rigid. so smooth. But yeah, each, I don't know, each river seems to have, yeah, whichever one you get used to it.
Yeah.
I don't know, I find that like once you've used a raft for a little while, Incepts are really fun. They're pretty light PVC. Rafts I've used in New Zealand are pretty nice. Yeah, it's just each raft sort of comes with its own little quirks and different sort of things. I mean, look at, what's the name of your big thing that you use on the Middle Fork again?
Oh, the sweep. It's a sweep that it's made by Dib.
Yeah, like, I mean, look at that thing. Yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, those Dib boats, they're made in Connecticut, I think, somewhere back east. They're a bomber. That thing is 30 years old.
Yeah.
It's still running strong.
But yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. I think rafts sort of, we use the school program that I work for on the island. They use a lot of, we have a lot of NRS rafts with them. Mm-hmm. And one Sotar. The Sotar is quite a bit bigger. But they're great. They're really sturdy. They can take a beating. Fantastic. I have a few friends with them that own them on the island as well. And yeah, work well.
All right, my last question. I'm going to send this off to Eric and Aaron. Well, you already answered one of my questions. Your favorite PFD. You said the Astro Green Vest, so we'll skip that one. My last one is throwback rope and length. Like, what diameter rope? What length of rope? What's your favorite throwback?
I like. It depends on the river again, but yeah, usually around 70 feet, give or take. I have, what the heck was that company? I got a couple from an Italian company that, Mark had, at our IRF course. I've been really happy with those.
Are those the green ones?
Yeah, the green bag, red bag. I can't remember the company. I'm going to look that up while we're talking here.
I think it's wwtc.info or something. It's like Whitewater Training Center. It's like WWTC is the brand.
Yeah, but yeah, I've been very happy with those. Those are an 8 mil throw bag, and it's great. It throws really well. I like throw bags that have like a wide mouth for restuffing. And the nice thing about those bags is they have a little spot to put a carabiner inside them, and then you can close it off, and it's padded, so you could throw it with that in it. But yeah, something that stuffs well, something that throws really nicely, are the main things. And then having a rope that works for the length of your river. When I worked on the Tully, we had super short ropes that we carried, as well as a couple throw bags. And that river's in Australia, super technical, really tight, really steep. And you don't need very much rope. I mean, the river sometimes is only like 15 feet wide, and you're putting rafts down through really narrow chutes and passives and undercuts and all that sort of stuff. So it's, we had like short coils of rope that we just throw, and then we tie them off in the boat and have throw bags and stuff for other things. But so it depends on the type of river that you're working on.
Cool. All right, that's the end of my rapid fire questions. Aaron, Eric, do you guys have any questions for Dave?
I'll go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I talking with Dave here, and just like one of the things I wish I had more of a chance to do on our RIF course is just hear about some of his favorite multi-day trips. Because, I think we have our go-to trips that we do all the time. But, we talk about the Middle Fork of the Salmon a lot, and like the Illinois and the Grand Canyon here and in the lower 48, but like, Dave's been all over the place, and I'm wondering what are some of his favorite like destination multi-day trips where, hey, maybe this would be a cool trip to, clearly, after the COVID's over, like, yeah, do a big trip out there and go run something. So I'm curious, Dave, like, what are some of your favorite multi-day trips that are a little farther flung?
All right. I'll give you my top five. How's that sound?
All right. So,
recent trips, favorite top, Elsack River in the Yukon, out of Yukon into BC, into Alaska. phenomenal, amazing scenery, wicked whitewater, beautiful, beautiful, crazy landscape, and a heliportage. Yeah, fantastic. Tatshenshini River in the north as well. It's a little bit mellower for sure, but again, it just sort of builds in grandeur. Like you start off in Dalton Post and then you cruise down the river. You get a bit of white water on the second day. And then, you cruise down through some of this amazing landscape. The Zanskar River in India, it's up in Ladakh. It's, you leave from Leh, drive around to a place called Kargil, and then drive over another pass. And then you raft for 9 days through like a 5,000 foot deep gorge, for 9 days. And it's just, yeah, mind boggling landscape. Gorgeous. You're at like 10,000 feet above sea level. And, it's just phenomenal, phenomenal area. The Landsborough River in New Zealand on the South Island, 3 day heli rafting trip. And then the last one is the Brahmaputra, which is in Arunachal Pradesh, in the northeastern province of India. And it's, you fly into a place called Pasighat, and then you drive for a couple of days up to a place called Tutin, and then you put in and raft through this massive high-volume rapids with these 150-foot-long sand beaches and get to camp all the way down. And it's huge white water, cool drop, phenomenal.
Is that commercially rafted?
Yeah, all of those are commercial trips.
And how long was that last one?
Is it 14 days? Four, 2 days of driving, 12 days on the river, or not? No, 11 days on the river. Sorry.
Wow, that sounds amazing. That's incredible.
Yeah, that was when I worked for an Indian company for about a year and a half, over a few seasons, and hung out and got to do some pretty wild trips.
Now, how'd you spell the last one? What was it?
One second. I'm gonna. You know.
No, we can throw it on at the end. We can just we'll figure that out at the end. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I was like, I couldn't really. What?
It's the famous Brahmaputra,
Brahmaputra. Yeah, you got it.
But you must have been high up on you must have been the headwaters, right?
Yeah, we're up just sort of shy where it comes out of Tibet.
So on your list, the Landsborough kind of surprised me. So what's the deal with that? Well, how did that sneak in there?
The Landsborough? It's rad, man. Like, I don't know. I've had great views up there. You fly up to the top of the river. So you fly up the river and then you to the put in and then you raft out for 2 days. So you have set up camps. There's like, we had hot showers at the second night. It was like wicked rapids, crazy cool landscape. And there's a helicopter. That was fun.
is there a private land? How do they have showers in
a room? It's just like a gap, like a sort of like a set up little camp. Like the two camps that they have, they're set up for the season, and then they take everything down again.
Wow, that sounds sweet. You guys take gear boats down on that thing too, or do they just paddle boat down and your stuff gets like, you know?
One to two paddle boats and a gear boat.
Oh, wow. That sounds like
barrels, though. So we had like massive big barrels on the front of the rafters. Did a hunting trip down there one time and I had a deer underneath the bow of my boat. It was fun. So it keep the meat cold.
That's awesome.
Oh, wow.
I think fun stuff. Going back to India really quick, I think that India is a mecca. I feel like there's so much boating there that people haven't even like touch the surface of. At least they've done it, but like we don't really know about it. I think the issue is it's intimidating to go to India. Like, Do you have any advice for somebody who's like, yeah, somebody who wants to go boat there? Do you have any advice for somebody who might want to go to India and paddle?
Reach out to some of the local companies. There's some really fantastic paddlers. There's groups in Aquaterra Adventures in Delhi. There's groups of kayakers around Kerala that are really good. It's just reaching out through like Facebook and to some of the online groups in there. There's a guidebook for, where's that area? Out to the east.
Meghalaya?
Yeah, Meghalaya. What the heck's his name? That was written by an English gentleman. And yeah, there is a lot of stuff. There's a gentleman named Shalab. He runs a kayaking school up on the Alaknanda. So there's definitely stuff to do. Reaching out to local companies for some beta, some information. India is an interesting experience. It can be frustrating at times paddling there, but there is so much stuff to paddle and to get on and to go and check out, multi-day trips, creaking. But it's being patient and taking time. You might not get everything that you want in the first trip or the second trip. It might take longer. So working through things, enjoying the experience, because it's definitely an experience.
Thanks, Dave. That's awesome. One follow-up. So what's your short list of ones you haven't done that you really want to do?
Oh, short list? I'd like to do the Salt River at some point. I think that'd be pretty cool. I'd like to get down to the Rogue. I'd like to get to the Grand Canyon at some point, because surprisingly enough, I haven't done that yet. I would like to get onto the Magpie River, which is out in the east of Canada. And I'd like to get, this isn't a multi-day trip, but I would really like to get to the Zambezi River. And then I'd like to go paddle in Russia at some point, rafting or paddling. But so that would be some of my, Peru. Peru would be amazing to get down and do some of the multi-days down there.
Oh, yeah, totally. Cool. Thanks.
Super solid list of to-dos. Solid list of to-dos. What would you say, you know, in all your experience kind of going around, you've been with a lot of commercial companies, and in doing that, you probably also have seen a lot of private boating. What would you say are like the three most common sort of things where it's like you look at it and cringe a little bit? Like the things you see sort of universally wherever you are, there's like tendencies to do like these one, two, three things, and it sort of makes the hair on the back of your neck go up a little bit every time you see it. What are the mistakes people make out there all over the place?
Mistakes. I don't know. Like, I think sometimes maybe people don't either bring too little stuff or too much stuff. That's one sort of thing. Like, you sometimes see people and they're out in the middle of nowhere and you're like, why do you not have this or that? Or they have like their boats are loaded to the nines. You're like, holy smokes, like stacked. And you're just like, holy, that's a lot of stuff. I don't know. I'm not really good at that sort of question. What quality?
So, yeah, no, that's great. Like, good for you. You're a better human than most of us. So that's good. I think one of the other questions would be, you know, as someone who's boated all over the place, what would be your advice to younger, newer, you know, aspiring boaters? It's like, what is the one piece of advice? Like, what's the one thing that somebody should really focus on working on to become a better boater?
Do you mean raft guide or kayaker?
Do what you want with it. Like, yes.
For rafting, communication, working on your skills as a guide to be able to communicate effectively with your clients. Being able to, like, good customer service. Like, I mean, just being kind of having fun, like, and working really well with your with your crew on a, like, especially on multi-day trips, working and single day trips as well. Being like, single day trips are really good for, if you're getting into guiding, doing lots of single day trips for first little while, because you get really in touch with a section of river. You can really work it. You can dial in your skills on that section of river, and then you can see different things. When I worked for a lot of companies that worked on multiple rivers, which is something I look for, because I wanted to sort of experience different types of whitewater. And then for kayaking, just working your skills up and practicing different things, practicing ferries, practicing catching eddies, and then building up that to getting onto different types of creeks and different styles of rivers, big volume, medium, low volume, bouncing under rocks, having fun, having a good crew to go with. Using some of the resources too that are out there now, like if like PDX Kayaker, or like on the island here, we have a pretty solid Facebook group. And being able to know who those paddlers are, there's always people going out, and then having other people that maybe aren't on Facebook that you go out with as well. But you can get a pretty good mix in there.
Is Facebook the main place to meet paddlers right now?
I'm thinking, like, if you're just getting into it, yeah, I think so. That would be sort of the first spot that I go to. If I was like, hey, I'm new to this area, I wonder who's paddling here. I'd be like, I mean, at least in Western, probably European area. Like, I mean, that would be sort of what I'd be thinking.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, totally wrong, but that's my thought.
Well, the last thing I want to bring up and talk about is your website. Do you want to just, you have a really awesome website. Do you want to talk about like how it started, what it's about, what you put on there?
Yeah, so I basically started a blog in 2005, and when I was working in Honduras. And so I started a Blogspot, and I was rafting a lot, so I called it Rafting Life. And then, it's just sort of morphed into its own website now. I post just sort of stories and pictures mostly, friend traveling, sometimes videos, that sort of stuff. And I have a Facebook page for it. But yeah, just sort of, it's fun. It was just basically, the idea was to share stories and pictures from travels and adventures on the river, either be it rafting or kayaking, from wherever I was in the world. And it's been quite the adventure. It's been going on for 15 years now. It's kind of cool.
I was just kind of scrolling through it as you were talking. Again, I have it open in front of me. It's an amazing website. And it's a huge resource for people looking for more information. But definitely, like, what I'm seeing now is most Canadian stuff. Do you have stuff from back in the day from all these travels, you know, to India?
Oh, yeah. Kind of stuff? Most of that's a lot. So you'd have to dig back into it a little bit.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I should probably do, is make a better archive area for it. Because I haven't really been rafting overseas since 2011 was my last trip to India. And I've done a kayaking trip to Ecuador with a company from the Kootenays called Endless Adventures. Ecuador Kayak. It's definitely, so I haven't done as much international stuff in the last number of years. I've been working in hospital up in the Comox Valley and kayaking a lot throughout the winter, teaching for a high school program here and teaching for an outdoor school, and then guiding in the Yukon. In the time, so less time overseas, but you know, that's the way it goes sometimes.
That's for sure, especially now. I think a lot of our exciting international travel might be stymied for a bit. I definitely had some trips I wanted to do in the fall that are dead. Well, Dave, we do a thing called Gear of the Week. We all kind of like mention some piece of gear that we like to kind of finish off the show. I'll start because I have one this week. And for me, it's the Waka OG. I just got it. I picked it up today.
Everybody I talk to here on Hood River is like, it's just a fun boat. So I had to get one. Haven't paddled it yet, but I have a question for you guys. Is the way kayaks bought just going to change?
I don't know. It's definitely, there's a lot of kayaks being sold online these days from a variety of different retailers.
I mean, are kayak shops dead?
I think like there's still kayak shops on the mainland in Vancouver that are doing. I think the whitewater side of the business for kayak shops is shrinking immensely, but it's. I still think there's going to be a few around. I think the amount of them that are around is going to get smaller, and you're going to see more sales being made online for sure.
That trend, though, like the trend against whitewater has been going on forever, right? Like the fastest growing thing for like the last decade has been wreck boat, you know, in the kayak world. I mean, that's where Jackson was making money, is more sit on tops than probably in hard, like whitewater boats. And I think that's true with, you know, the Perception was there, Jackson was there, like all those guys in their wreck lines is really where the business model was. I mean, starting 15 years ago. But there are some kayak shops that are going to survive, but you look around and there's a hell of a lot fewer of them than there was. I mean, how many I've seen five go out of business in Southern Oregon over the last 15 years, like yeah. Try and open and survive and fail. You know, how many of us buy new kayaks? Like, not, I don't know who buys new kayaks, but it's not very many of us. Cause I feel like I've bought one new boat ever. And I know about three other people that could say the same thing. Like that, it feels like it's a huge used gear market. I mean, not when you get to spray skirts and paddles and some of that kind of gear, but when it comes to actual boats,
I buy about a huge used one market there. New boat a year, just the way my world works. And I always, the last three have been bought from a dude at like in his backyard, basically, you know, it's been kind of like a, pay me some money and I'll get you a boat, a brand new boat. It hasn't been from a store, hasn't been online. It just feels like that's maybe the trend.
Yeah. I think if you're going to be in that business, the place to be is in the, and I think this is true, this has been true for a long time, is in the gear, you know, not the boats themselves, but the secondary stuff.
Yeah.
That's really where that business model is.
But to me, it doesn't seem like whitewater's dwindling, whitewater kayaking at least. I feel like more people are doing it. I don't know how, I mean, maybe I live in a bubble here in Hood River, but it just seems like there's kayaks in everybody's car right now.
I don't know. It sure feels like in Southern Oregon, growing up, there was, you know, you'd go out to like Lineman's on a Wednesday night, and there'd be 50 people there. And, you know, then there was a huge period where I felt like I was the only boater in Southern Oregon. And now it feels like there's more than ever. Yeah. And yet there's no kayak shops in Southern, there's no kayak shops there. So I don't know if it's the market's not big enough or whatever it is, but I don't know. That to me is this weird little sort of space. But then you go up to Denver and there's like what, four big kind of robust kayak shops. So maybe it just depends on where you are and what that community looks like too.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think it depends where you are. I think I was kayaking on the Gold River, which is in north central Vancouver Island, and we had like two rafts and like a bunch of kayakers out on the weekend, probably about 30 people, including about 8 children between the ages of like 6 to like 12. So like there's definitely some growth happening in some areas. It'll be interesting to see what happens over the next little while with what happens with the retail. I know one of our shops on Vancouver Island, Ocean River Sports, just closed down. But then there's some other growth that happens with other shops that are take over some of that market share.
Yeah, I mean, I forgot what a kayak shop even looks like, to be honest with you guys, because we don't have one here in town. Like, it seems like they're always backdoor deals. Anyway, that's my gear of the week.
Gear of the week we got. Yeah, it's a good one. I'm excited to hear how you like it once you paddle it.
I better like it.
I've been interested in that boat for a while.
Yeah,
just got a new boat for me, so I'm set.
It looks cool. Happy. I can tell you it looks cool, and people ooh and all when you have it in the back of your truck.
And so that's a big part of it is you look rad driving around town.
The bell of the ball to put in.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is in this town, I mean, a lot of people have OGs, have that boat. So I'm behind the times. I'm not the, I've been oogling over other people's boats lately. And so now I'm just starting to fit in.
It's funny how that is. When I first finished my dory, you know, a wood dory, and I'd take it to a put in, I kind of told my wife, I was like, just watch what happens when you get to this boat ramp. And within 10 minutes of being there, you've got like 12 people standing around your boat wanting to talk to you about it.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody kind of wants to walk over and have that conversation. You get sort of get to be popular based on your equipment.
Yep.
It's kind of fun. I'll do my gear of the week next if that works. I just got a Kokatat Icon dry suit. And I've, you know, been through a fair share of dry suits, but I've never, just for whatever the reason, wanted to drop the money on a Kokatat. And we just finished some guide training stuff where I was in the water a ton, like swimming a lot. And every day I would take my dry suit off and be bone dry on the inside. I've owned a decent number of dry suits, and even like new out of the gate from companies we've all heard of, I was never like bone dry if I was out swimming for hours. And in this Kokatat Icon, like, took it off and there was zero water, like totally dry, whole new experience for me, which sounds stupid in a dry suit, but is amazing when you actually get a dry suit that 100% works. I had a bunch of my other guides who were helping with training who had brand new dry suits from, again, companies we've all heard of, and like brand new day 1, 2, 3, 4 on the water. And they were taking them off and they're wet and bone dry inside, and it's the greatest thing in the world. So drop the extra money, get a Kokatat, because being dry is rad.
Is the Icon
that's my gear of the week.
Is the Icon the one with the back zipper?
Yes. I went that route. It's super comfortable. Having to have an assistant, you know, to get your clothing on and off is very strange, and I'm not sure I love that part. Especially because I like to occasionally do some solo boating, so I have to figure out how to sort of, you know, corral my body to pull that off. But when it, like, under a life jacket and everything else, it's insanely comfortable. And it's super easy getting in and out of. Like, just getting in and out of it is actually easier and more comfortable. Like, it's a more logical way to step into a, you know, totally sealed up suit. So I think I'm pretty sold on both the back zip. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sold on the back zip.
What color did you get?
I own Orange Torpedo, so I got the one with orange. Obviously. I'm not going to get a neon green one. Come on. Checking. Orange and tan, and it looks good.
I mean, that's the big
thing. I'm good looking at it.
They can do custom colors, so you can do some rad stuff with those dry suits.
Totally. No, I didn't. I needed it sort of now, and also just, you know, didn't want to drop all the money, so I went for the non-custom.
Only but part of the money.
Cool. Only part of the money. It's still a decent amount of money, but it's money well spent, it appears.
And I have to say this: when you say the dry suits that cost less or that don't work as well, that's NRS. I mean, in my opinion, I mean they cost less. So if you don't have, you know, $1,000, $1,200, the NRS dry suit is affordable, but they do leak pretty quick. But for me, the immersion research dry suits work really well too. I just want to point out, like, the Kokatat, I have one of each. I have a Kokatat and an immersion research, and they're both really good.
And I went back and forth between those two, and everybody I know who has an IR one loves them. Yeah. So I'm not, yeah, for sure. I have not used an IR dry suit, but I've heard nothing but good things.
But I want to make sure we're clear. The ones that tend to leak are not Kokatat or IR either.
That would be, I would agree with that statement. Yeah. I will not say what I have or have not tried. I will not say what I have tried and been disappointed in, but I will say that those two are worth your money, I'm pretty sure. So there's my gear of the week. All right. Else we got?
Aaron, Davey?
I don't have any gear this week. Davey, do you have any?
Yeah, Werner Surge Paddle. I've been using it for a little while, and it's pretty awesome. It's got a really nice blade catch, like for kayaking, for creeking and stuff. I've been really, really loving it. Plus, it's like super bright and stands out really nicely. But it's fantastic.
I just got that paddle. I paddled it like 3 times and I love it. I'm right
there. Really?
Big fan. Yeah.
What is it?
The reach on it, the little shot, like the blade offset, it's just really nice. It has a great catch. So like when you're reaching forward and you plant your stroke, this like places really nicely. Great for boofing. It's fantastic. I've been super happy with it.
So what is different about the Surge? Is it just there's that little bit of offset? Like there's just that little bit of like it's just a slightly different geometry.
Slight offset. So like it's not. It's heavy, so it's sort of like Sherpa sort of style design mm-hmm. blade, but then it has that slight offset. So like when you're reaching and you're placing your forward stroke, it just gives you that little bit of extra reach and then catch when you're placing a blade, and yeah, it makes a big difference. You should get one, Zachary.
Well, I've been thinking about it. That's why I'm asking. Like, I need a paddle, and so I've trying to been debating whether I'm worried it's gimmicky. I'm worried, like, it's this new thing that's gimmicky. So I've been kind of waiting to hear about it, if people like it or not. Aren't there two? There's, like, the Surge, and there's some other smaller one or bigger one?
The Strike. The Strike, which is smaller.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for, like, creaking, you go with the Surge?
Yeah.
Okay.
And river running. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's fantastic.
Eric, you're pretty stoked on it.
And durable.
I like it so far. I mean, I haven't. It's like I said, I'm like 3 days in, but so far, super into it.
I mean, I don't like the color. It's just a little bit bright for me.
But you can see it from a long way down river, though, if you're doing like signals and stuff. Pretty nice.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
Thanks for joining us. So, those of you listening, get out, go boating. It's summertime. The boating is happening. There's water in places. Some of it, it's starting to wane, and some of it is just coming into its prime. So either way, there's rivers to be had and boating to be done. So listen to this week's, then go do something fun and come back and listen to next week's, because I'm sure it's going to be awesome, just like this one. So have fun. Thanks so much. Go do your thing. Good for you. Go team.
That was an especially awkward ending. Good job.
Wow, Eric, that was
I'm committing to the cops.
Have you been practicing the awkward ending? For what?
I'm just kidding. What I'm doing for the mirror thing.